philosophies in my experience and my experiment.
Why, hello again. Who knew it would be so soon between episodes after such a hiatus? I wanted to come on today because I have received an autism diagnosis and it has been very life-affirming, and I wanted to talk about it because I feel like most of us have quite a limited view of autism, including, might I add, many psychologists. So, yeah, so I just wanted to kind of have a talk because I shared on my stories a little bit about it over the last day or two, and it's created a lot of conversation and a lot of people who have been like, oh, but I do that. I'm not autistic. And so I thought I would talk a bit more about this for those who are curious to know because things that I've said resonate with them, curious to know because they see these traits in their children, or they just really want to have a more solid understanding of autism. Because I think for some, finding out I'm autistic is not a surprise at all. And for some, it is very surprising because I don't fit the idea that is in their head about autism. And, and that is generally not a woman who is in her 40s, mostly pretty functional, highly intelligent, very communicative, and has had a bit of success in her life. And that doesn't necessarily fit and seems confident and outgoing, verbose. It doesn't really fit the image that they have in their head of what autism is. And there's good reason for that, because until recently, we didn't even really know that girls could be autistic. It's been primarily a boy thing, and the way that it presents itself in boys is very different. And in fact, I would say not just the way it presents itself in boys, but as it presents person to person can be quite different. And there's different layers. So, I don't want people to call me a high functioning autistic person. I am autistic. That's it, right? So I want to get into some of the questions because it has raised a lot of questions in people. And I want to start by saying that I feel like we have this when it comes to autism, we're very focused on limitation. The diagnostic process is focused on what my, struggles are, what my limitations are, what behavior is abnormal, what, is disordered about me. And it's really interesting because I think that's a really limited way of viewing autism. I think it's it's obviously part of a diagnostic process to find out how this has hindered and impacted my life in a positive way. But for all the negative things about autism, there are so many amazing things. And this is what I kind of want to talk about today, is the amazing things about autism. Because if you have a kid and you're recognizing there's some odd behavior and you're concerned about certain things, it's very easy for us to focus on the limitations of autism rather than the extraordinary things that go along with being autistic. So I'm going to actually open up my Instagram and kind of read out some of the questions and comments that I've had. So somebody asked me, I talked about my shower routine and how I have a routine. Like, it's a pretty rigid routine. I do the same thing. I turn on the water. I wait for it to get hot. I then take my clothes off while I'm waiting for it to get hot. I hop in the shower. I wash my vagina. I then usually wash my pits. I shampoo my hair. And sometimes I leave the shampoo in if I'm using a grey shampoo. And so I have to remember that. And while my shampoo's in, I'll wash my body with a, you know, like a sponge kind of thing with soap on it, and I'll wash it all over. And then I rinse out my shampoo, and then I put the conditioner in, and then I wait for the conditioner to kind of set while I wash my face with a cleanser. And then I rinse my hair out. I'll wash my cleanser off, rinse my hair out. I then turn the hot water tap off. I turn the cold water tap off. I breathe and I count to 10 while it's on my chest. And then I put my face under it for a little bit. And then I turn the cold shower off. I come out of the shower. I grab my big towel, which is for my body. And I flick it 10 times. And then I put it around my body. Oh, actually... Now, see, this is the thing. I'm forgetting. I get my small towel. It depends on whether I wash my hair or not that day. I get my small towel. I flick my hair back and forth 10 times to get like the excessive water out. And then I wrap my hair up in a towel. And I have wiped down a bit of my body to dry it off, but not all of it. And then I get my big towel and I put it around my body. I brush my teeth. I spray my face with toner. And that's it, right? And each of those steps is like it never changes, and I'm quite reliant on that routine, because if I don't do it in that, if I'm not thinking, this next step, this is the next step, this is the next step. So when I finish washing my vagina, I have to think to myself, shampoo. Okay, grab the shampoo, put the shampoo in, and then I have to think to myself, okay, now lather the soap. So each kind of step is a conscious. Thought, yep, I have to do that now. Yep, I have to do that now. And somebody asked me, what happens if you don't do that? And I think that the response they were expecting was that something bad would happen, but actually it's way more simple than that. I would forget. I would forget to have washed myself. I used to always come out of the shower as a kid with the shampoo still in my hair, having forgotten to wash it out. I need these routines, and they're quite rigid, in place so that I know what's next. I know what's expected of me. I know what the process is, and then I execute it step by step to make sure I don't forget anything, because it is likely that I will come out of the shower and be like, did I condition my hair? And I can't actually remember. So, that's that. Now, what were the, I'm just looking at my little questions here. I had a lot of questions around the diagnosis process and how I went down that. So the first thing I did, was a lot of research, and there's some really great stuff out there. Alison Davies is a friend of mine. She was actually the first autistic person that I met, or autistic woman that I met that I knew was autistic, and she was very open about it. And when she was talking about her experience, as I mentioned in the last episode, I really related to it. And so I got quite curious and started doing a lot of research, which is a very autistic thing to do. And so over the years, I've just slowly explored it and peeled it back layer by layer. And a couple of really great resources are the book Divergent Mind. It's on Audible. And this one is really great because, you know, we can have, there are many different neurotypes. ADHD. There's also things like sensory processing disorder. There's lots of different neurotypes. And this is a really great book because it kind of talks you through each with like a little checklist. And this was the thing that made me go, okay, yeah, definitely autistic. When I listened to the section on autism and the checklist came up, and every single one of them was pretty much, yep, oh, you know, as I mentioned last time. So I highly recommend giving that book a go. There's also a great podcast called The Neurodivergent Woman that has two psychologists, and one of them is neurotypical and one of them is ADHD autistic. And it's a really great, it's just very insightful. And I related so much to, I can't remember what her name is, Monique. Yes, that's on that podcast. So that's definitely worth a spin too. Now, as for the diagnosis, I wasn't actually going to do it. And as I explained last time, the reason that I chose to go down the route was more from a two kind of major things. One was work, just helping me to better advocate for myself, I guess. And the second one was peace of mind. I actually kept on almost gaslighting myself out of it. And this is something that I think happens a lot where it's like, yeah, but you know, I function. And you know, and there's almost this internalized view of autism that that as I've been moving through this, I've been battling with, because I'm like, but you know, I see myself as very capable and very resilient. And that doesn't match up with the ideas that I'd had around autism. So I have, even now, post-diagnosis, I'm still kind of a little bit gaslighty towards myself. Well, maybe you're not. Maybe you just think you are or something. I don't know. So what I would say about the diagnosis process is that self-diagnosis is absolutely a thing. If you really resonate, then it's very likely that you are autistic. And there doesn't need to be anything more than that if you don't need anything more than that. You know, for myself, I've created so much, like I'm not doing it to get support in terms of like going on the NDIS or anything like that. Maybe I will, but right now I have created a life that has enough scaffolding in it to help me function. And sometimes I'm not functioning very well, but I mostly have the language to kind of be able to explain why I am the way I am. Excuse the tree lopping that's happening next door. And so I think, yeah, so the diagnosis was more for me to kind of go, yep, okay. And that's who I am, even though I had already identified. So it was confirmation to kind of help me stop gaslighting myself. And it's kind of worked and still a little bit there. And the other reason was just so that, yeah, if I do need some kind of support, then it's available to me. But also so is, wow, gosh, they are really going for it. Hang on. Oh, well, I'm just going to keep going. If I can concentrate. Oh no, really? This is not good. Okay, so where was I? This is classic. This is autism in practice. Oh my God, I'm just so overwhelmed right now. Okay, so I'm going to try to explain what's happening. When that noise is there, now it's gone. Oh. Okay, when that noise is present, it's kind of all-consuming for me. I find it very difficult to hone in. You know, so if I'm in a cafe or anywhere where there's a lot of noise, I can't isolate. You know, a neurotypical person can kind of isolate. So they can go, oh, I'm going to block out all the stuff that's going on and I'm just going to put my attention and focus into this one thing. I don't really have that ability. So when this noise is happening, my nervous system is ramping up, right? It's going, wow, okay, this is a lot. There's a lot going on, and it doesn't know how to filter out. And that's really the basis of the autistic brain. It doesn't have the same filtering system that a neurotypical brain does, in my understanding. And I'm still, you know, in the infancy of my understanding of autism. But from what my psychologist explained it, like you have a colander. A normal person would have like a normal. A neurotypical person would have like a colander over their brain. And so they're filtering information. And autistic people don't necessarily have that same filtering system. So while this noise is going on, it's like I don't have the ability to just block it out. It overloads my system, and then my system goes into a meltdown, which just basically means that I lose focus. I lose my ability to think and my ability to communicate. One thing that actually some of you who are listening may have been at this particular, in this experience with me, but I was hosting a retreat a number of years ago. It might have been 2018. And I have a real thing about time. This is also can be an autistic trait, right? So like I stress about if I have to have a flight, if I have to be out of a particular place, God, then they're hammering, fantastic. If I have to be out of somewhere in a at a particular time, or I have an appointment at a particular time, there's a lot of anxiety that goes with that. And so we were running this retreat and checkout was 11 a.m. and it was kind of getting closer to that time and no one had even packed up. I was starting to get stressed. And when that happens, I kind of go into this mode of like franticness. So I'm frantically, almost resentfully packing up everything. And as this is happening, I'm just slowly melting down. And I don't have the verbal ability to stop one and to stop people and say, "Hey guys, we need to sort this out. Like we need to get ready." Instead, I just kind of go into this internal world where it's almost like I am isolated from the rest of the world, and I am just so consumed by my anxiety that I can't talk. Right? Like I can't say I need help. My husband always says, when you get like that, just ask for help. And he can't fathom, and a lot of people can't fathom, that I'm incapable of asking for help. Because if I'm not at that point, I'm very capable of asking for help. Can you help me with this? I need help with this, right? Like I don't have a problem with asking for help. It's when I reach a certain level of stimulation that I'm no longer functioning. And then the tears and, you know, and the anger, and it's all consuming. And that is what it's like to have a meltdown as an autistic person. And I'm not speaking for all. That's how I experience a meltdown, is this like complete shutdown of my cognitive functioning so that I cannot make, you know, clear logical decisions. That part of my brain I don't have access to. And I also lose access to the ability for me to be able to communicate my needs to other people. So that's kind of like what a meltdown is. The interesting thing is I was listening to someone speak on autism at Byron Writers Festival, and she was saying the thing with autism is as a child, and as particularly as a female child, because we know that autism presents very differently in girls, and that may be because of social constructs, but it also, who knows? There's many reasons why girls present differently to autistic boys. And not all boys present the same way either, right? But girls are very different. And so when you have a child like I was, who was a good student, and, quiet, relatively quiet, depended if I warmed up to someone, I could be loud and funny and gregarious and bossy. But otherwise, I was very shy and reserved. I was a bookworm. You know, I loved learning. I loved raising my hand to contribute. You know, pick me. I've got something. I know the answer. Like, and I was highly intelligent. I also was a really great talker. So I would have conversations with adults. Often adults were my preferred people because I felt like they kind of got me more, and I could have these conversations that I guess were quite advanced. I've always been a really great communicator, except when I'm having a meltdown. So for a girl, autism can often be a very internal experience, and because it's not hindering anyone else, except when I have my meltdowns, but often those meltdowns only happen in places where I feel safe, like at home. And often it's happening internally. So I was at a choir performance for my daughter, and she, you know, they had to line up, and it was all very chaotic. And so they had to line up from tall to short, and Mabel's very tall. So she's often with the larger kids, and they can be a little bit more Well, they're all kind of rough kids. Kids, they're kind of, you know, measuring against each other and moving. And Mabel doesn't like that. She it's overwhelming for her to be touched by people and moved. And if she doesn't know them, she doesn't like being touched by people she doesn't know. But also, it's just a lot of stimulation, and she hasn't actually been told, and none of the kids know what's really going on. But Mabel doesn't know what's really going on, and then this kind of I can see it building in her. And I watched her, you know, melting down, and I was constantly kind of trying to just hand signal to her, because sometimes the hand signaling is easier than communicating verbally in those moments of meltdown. So I'm pointing at her and me, and I'm like, do you want me to come to you? And she's like, no, no, no. And then the tears started, right? And so I ran off, grabbed her, pulled her aside, spoke to the teacher, and I stood next to her, and that was fine. But most of the time, meltdowns, you know, they occur in the home. And for me, oh my God, there's just so many things that like it's like when you have a diagnosis, all of those little puzzle pieces that you thought were like random, quirky bits about you actually really click into place, even just like the health stuff, right? Like as a kid at 18 months old, I had a febrile convulsion. A lot of children who are autistic, changes in temperature. So in that particular instance, my mum was going to a Tupperware party and she had wrapped me up, you know, like a baby burrito, and went into the house and the heater was on. And that change in temperature basically caused me to have a febrile convulsion. I also had really bad allergies as a child. I had asthma. IBS. I've always had, you know, I shit more than Mabel said to me the other day, Mum, you're like an elephant. And I said, why? Because elephants have great memories. And she was like, no, because you shit like 20 times a day. You know, I go to the toilet a lot, and that actually causes anxiety too, because wherever I go, I need to know where the toilet is, which causes more anxiety, which causes more IBS symptoms, right? And these are all related to autism. Glandular fever when I was 20. There's just so many things. Oh, my wrists. So I can't do push-ups or burpees because I can't actually put my weight on my wrists. My dad has carpal tunnel. I have really weak wrists. I can't open jars. My hands are often clumsy. So I drop a lot of things. I get very frustrated at myself. And Miko's always like, calm down. It's not a big deal. You just drop something. But for me, it causes this intense frustration. And these are all things that are also linked to autism, which has been really fascinating, even the way I would play. So as a kid, I think I might have mentioned this in the last episode, but I used to love cleaning coins and you know, putting them into piles, counting them, or like rather than playing with Barbies for me was dressing them up, making sure their hair didn't have any knots, making the accessories all, you know, perfect. And then when that was done, that was playtime done. I read a lot. I've always been just a very keen learner. And this is where it turns from limitation to like quite extraordinary. Because of my autism, I have so many interests and I love learning. And so I'm constantly learning about new things. I am a well of knowledge about all kinds of random shit. And in fact, that's fun for me. You know, like I remember I've always been perplexed by that question, what do you do for fun? I kind of don't understand that, because fun for me is actually just chilling and reading a book. But I don't actually understand the word fun. So there's that. It's also things like I don't understand trends. I don't understand why someone would do something because it's cool at one time. It seems so odd to me. There's so many odd things about people's behavior that I find really strange because I don't understand the concept. You know, like trends are like, well, why wouldn't you just have your own style instead of like constantly consuming shit, you know, like I don't, there's just things like, and makeup has never really made sense to me. Why would I waste all that time covering up my face so that I look like a clown? Like that sounds very harsh, and no judgment to anyone who chooses to wear makeup. I don't judge people for wearing makeup, like go for it, whatever makes you. But for me, I feel like I feel like a clown in it. I feel like I just don't really see the point of it. And so there's things like that, like I don't necessarily see the world in the same way as everyone else. I struggle with social interactions, and I feel like this is where it tips from like a limitation to something positive, right? Because yes, sometimes I struggle with small talk, but I'm also a really deep philosophical thinker, and I can read people really, really well because I've had to learn body language. And it's been actually a topic of interest for me is human behavior, which is often a fixation for girls with autism, is understanding people, being able to read them. We're highly empathetic because we can see in your face through years of pattern recognition what's going on inside of you just by looking at your face. I can read people really, really well. Where the limitation is in that ability to know how they're perceiving me. I can put on the cues. I know when to smile. I have kind of practiced a lot about like eye contact. Okay, now I think and this is going on in my head while I'm having a conversation with you. I'm looking at you. Okay, I feel like maybe I've looked a little bit too much. I'm going to look away for a second. And okay, now would be a good time to look back. Like I'm thinking about this while I'm having a conversation with you. I'm thinking about what I'm going to say next while I'm having a conversation with you. But in years of watching human behavior, in years of watching people, I've really learned what makes them tick. And I've really learned to recognize just small little changes in you and what that means because of, years of routine and pattern recognition, right? So what else? Let me just check my phone. This is probably going to be a long one. All right, so the questions. One was the diagnostic process. How was that for me? I actually really loved it. So I worked with someone who, let me just find her on Instagram. If you want to find her, she is i.am.l.o.u. I am Blue. She's a psychologist. I think the trick when it comes to the diagnostic process is finding someone who is neuroaffirming, because it's going to, you know, the diagnostic process is not created for adults. It's created for young children. And so when you're going through that process, there's a lot of questions that are related to, you know, at 18 months old, like when did you start to walk? When did you ever use other people's hands as like to open doors? Did you, you know, that kind of like those, the questions are very much geared towards typical boy presentation, young boy presentation of autism. They are not nuanced for adults. So making sure that you get someone who is neuroaffirming is really, really important and will make the process so much better. I loved Lou. Like it was just like it was a fantastic experience. So I think finding the right person is really important, and making sure they have a real understanding of how autism presents in girls and women is of utmost importance, because it is really different. And you don't want to have to be, you know, self-advocating all the way through the process to try to get an answer. You should be able to find someone who understands autism from the women's perspective. It's just going to make your process so much easier. Okay, so I found the process really liberating myself. And I know some people that's not the case, but for me, I already knew it. It was just kind of like someone was affirming it for me, which was fucking amazing. Okay, so how I found the assessment process. Some said it was a great validating experience and others have had shitty recommendations with practitioners not well versed in female autism. So, and, asshole or bad bedside manners. And the process, yeah, it can be overwhelming. For me, it was quite liberating. And I had thought a lot about it prior. So, in the week leading up, I'd say, well, you know, my dad's accident kind of threw things a little bit for a six. But I had been really immersing myself more and more into reading about autism. And so therefore I kind of, and most autistic people will do this, almost have like, you know, here is my War and Peace version of everything that I think might make me autistic, right? Like that's quite a typical behavior for an autistic person, is to like be cataloging all the things. And so I had already started exploring through my childhood simple things like, I used to have a purple cup at my nana's house. There were two cups. There was a purple and an orange cup. Mine was the purple cup. And my cousin and I used to fight over it all of the time. And I would go into meltdown about it. And my nana even left me the purple cup, right? So there's the kind of that stuff going on. Like autistic people will often have attachment to random things. So it may be something that nobody else gives a shit about. You may have had a random rock, and if anyone else touches that rock, it's really distressing. You know, my daughter has a chair that she sits in. Now, when Miko was recovering from heart surgery, we had to move that chair. Oh my God, the meltdowns that ensued from moving the chair, because she is really attached to the chair. And I'm like that too. I'm really attached to my things. So, So I had done a lot of self-exploration around things that were different about me, and that really helped me in the process. So just wanted to mention that. How has the conversation gone with your parents? Have you told them, and has it sparked any conversation about their own neurotype? Because as we know, it's hereditary. Yes. So autism is hereditary. So is ADHD. No, it doesn't come from fucking vaccines. And you are born with it. So, I was born this way, and I have had conversations with my parents. I don't really want to talk too much about their experience, because it's their experience, but I will say I haven't spoken to my dad because he is in hospital at the moment, and once he's cognitively back on deck, I definitely will have the conversation with him, because I'm quite sure that he is a lot of the traits that I have, he has. So sound sensitivity is really big with my dad. So is organization and having things organized and in particular ways. So one of the things that when I started to speak to my mum about it, she's quite confused, I think, because of the stereotype of autism, and she doesn't want, and I think this is a common concern. I actually have it for my own daughter, and I'm not getting her diagnosed right now, even though I'm relatively confident that she is also not neurotypical, because I've still got some unpacking to do around this myself. I don't want her to be limited, and it's not her limitations. This is the thing. It's the limitations that are projected upon autistic people. We all have limitations as humans. We all have limitations. I don't want people tiptoeing around me, but I do want them to know what it's like to be me so that they can offer the support when I need it. I wrote a post in my Instagram stories. Actually, I'll just read it. After I spoke about it, which really sums it up quite well. One thing I would say about my diagnosis is that I have not changed. I am the same person I was this morning and yesterday and the days and years before. If your perception of me changes, as a result of my diagnosis, that is something for you to unpack. And that, you know, and I'm still doing some unpacking of what that means, because I feel like it's okay for me to be autistic, but what would that mean? What would be projected upon my daughter with that diagnosis? That's the thing that concerns me. It's not the diagnosis itself, because she either is or isn't autistic. What concerns me is the discrimination that autistic people face. I'm big enough and ugly enough to advocate for myself, and I'm not afraid to because I've had years of practice. But for my daughter, I just don't want, I want her to have the support she needs, and I will advocate for that. But I'm still kind of like, I just don't want that projection upon her, because we still do really have this limited view of autism. That's the problem, not the diagnosis. So on that question about my parents, I think they're still kind of coming to terms with it too. And I think it's quite confronting, because my mum, some of the things I've said to her about my experience, she's like, yeah, but everyone's like that. And I'm like, no, mum, they're not. And then it's like the ticket, then she's kind of like, but does that mean that I might be too? Well, maybe. It is hereditary. So yeah, we've got a, you know, there's more conversations to be had about that. Okay, how's the conversation? Also wondering if you've been assessed for other neuro, you know what I'm saying, as part of the whole assessment process. No, I haven't. Only autism. I may or may not be ADHD. I don't really know. I know from reading, when I read The Divergent Mind, I didn't resonate so much with the ADHD part of things, but I really heavily resonated with the autism part of things. Like, so for example, with ADHD, coffee, I cannot, like, because it just, it causes, like, stimulants. Like, they actually make me highly anxious. And so, you know, anyway, so the short answer to that is no, I haven't been assessed for ADHD. And I mean, I have sensory processing stuff, so maybe I have sensory processing disorder. I don't know all of the nuances, but, you know, really what I, my main thing was just finding out whether or not I was autistic. Okay. So I think that's pretty much it. Let me just check if there were any other questions maybe here. Thank you so much for sharing. It's really helping me. Yeah, I think that's about it. So I guess if there's anything you take away from today, it's, you know, if you resonate with some of the things that I've been talking about. Oh, actually, I want to finish on this, right? So we've talked a lot about, like, some of the limitations and some of the things that are abnormal when it comes to the diagnostic process, abnormal about me. The limitations, the sensory overstimulation, the sometimes not being able to read situations, the needing all of the information, needing to know what's next. I'm not a control freak. This is actually, and I'm not neurotic. This is actually just the way my brain functions, right? And I've been labeled those things. Oh, she's just highly anxious. She's just highly sensitive. You know, she's, you know, she's just very quick to anger. All of these things, you know, they're all the negative aspects of autism. But for the negative aspects, there's just so much that else that is brilliant about being autistic. The way I perceive the world is so much heightened. It's heightened. And so, you know, even though I'm sound sensitive, I love to crank music and I'm creative. You know, I'm really, really highly creative. I'm structured. I'm great at putting in plans, mapping things out, the problem solving to a certain extent. And I'm really great at reading people. I'm really empathetic. I really understand what makes people tick. I'm compassionate and empathetic, and you know, and I'm funny. And there's a lot, like, you know, like there's a lot that is like what I see when I'm thinking about autism. What I'm seeing is all of the amazing things that make me, the philosophical deep thinking, the incredible amount of intelligence that I have. You know, like these are all gifts that come thanks to my autism. And they are to be celebrated. And I think that's the shift that we need to make, is because Ali, you know, my mate Alison Davies, she talks about autistic culture and how like adjusting our workplaces and schools and community settings to being autistic friendly actually benefits us all. It benefits us all because we may not realize that we're overstimulated, but all of that sensory input is, you know, like, well, for an autistic person, we're more sensitive to that, but like that is having an impact on you. And so there's no, I don't know. I just feel like we need to shift from it being perceived limitation, things that make us abnormal, into celebrating the things that make us really gifted. Because a lot of ASD people are very gifted. We're not weirdos and freaks. And we are, you know, everyone is different. So everyone is different. And that is to be celebrated, not perceived as problematic, but perceived as possibility, you know? So yeah, that's where I'm at. If you've got any questions or you want to hit me up about anything in this episode, reach out via Instagram at Carlosophies. And that's it from me. Don't know when I'll be back. Who knows? Peace out. Carlosophies, I'm Carly Nimmo.